the contemporary issues in missions, none is more significant than the issue, how do you reach the world? Some would say, we reach the world one individual at a time. Others would say, we must reach the world one religion at a time. Others would say, we must reach the world one nation at a time. France, Mali, Indonesia, China. But today, most mission strategists are saying that the best way to reach the world is one people at a time. What do we mean when we talk about a people? This terminology is becoming more and more widespread within mission circles. And in our churches, it's being used more and more. We talk about reaching peoples for Christ. What is a people or a people group? A widely used definition says that a people group is a significantly large sociological grouping of individuals who perceive themselves to have a common affinity for one another. Now, that affinity may come about because they share a language, perhaps because they share a religious perspective, maybe because they share certain ethnic characteristics, or maybe they share a certain situation together. But whatever it is, it's something that draws them together and creates in them a sense of we, they. They understand who they are, and they understand how others are different from them. Sometimes other terminology is used to describe the very same phenomena. Anthropologists use the term subcultures. But if you use that term in Latin America, it's seen as derogatory. And so a person like Don McGavern uses the term homogeneous units. That is, segments of society which have some characteristic in common. The Bible also uses the term peoples, and it refers to ethnic subgroups. The Bible uses the term nation, people, tribe, tongue, family, and they're all synonyms for what we have defined as a people group. In fact, we discover that in Genesis 12, that the word used in the promise given to Abraham is this word which would be translated people group. In the Greek language, it's translated as the word from which we derive the English term ethnic, so that Jesus is commissioning his church to make disciples of all the ethnic groups of the world, all the people groups, nations in the sense of a people, rather than nations in the sense, the modern use of the term where we're talking about a geographical political unit or a nation state. And so, missiologists and those who are committed to the mission enterprise are using the term people group. Now, what is an unreached people group? If we begin to look at the world and we need to see the world as a people group, what is an unreached people group? You see, a people group is the, for evangelistic purposes, is the largest group within which the gospel can be spread as a church planting movement without encountering barriers of understanding and acceptance. So an unreached people group consists of those cultural and linguistic subgroups, urban and rural, among whom there is yet no indigenous community of believing Christians with adequate numbers and resources able to evangelize this people group or this subgroup. In other words, it's a people group with no church. That doesn't mean that there aren't any Christians in that. There may be a few isolated Christians, but there are not sufficient Christians who have the resources and the numbers to effectively carry on the evangelization of their people group without outside help. That's what an unreached people group is. Now, let me give you some examples of unreached people groups. The Hakka of Taiwan, the Chukchi of Togo, the Gypsies of Spain, the Karen Pho of Thailand, the Bambara of Senegal, the Berbers of Morocco, the Gola of Liberia, the Kurds of Lebanon, the Bil in India, the Kachikel in Guatemala, the Akha in Burma, Sikhs in Canada, Sundanese in Indonesia. These are examples of people groups which have not yet been penetrated with the gospel to the point where there is a church movement within that people group capable of evangelizing the rest of the people group. Well, where did this emphasis on people group begin? In a sense, it's been with us some time because it's in the Bible. And unconsciously, the gospel has been spreading through people groups, through tribal groups. The evangelization of Europe took place that way. But as a conscious strategy, it really burst onto the scene in 1974 at Lausanne I, the Lausanne Congress on World Evangelization, which took place in Lausanne, Switzerland. And it came primarily through a plenary address by Dr. Ralph Winter. Dr. Winter at that time was the professor of history of missions at the School of World Missions of Fuller Theological Seminary, where he worked very closely with Dr. Donald McGavern. McGavern speaks of Winter's speech as a bombshell, because up to that time, it had become accepted orthodoxy in many mission circles that the way you evangelized the world was one country at a time. If a church was planted in a nation, it was the responsibility of that church to reach all of the people of the nation. But what Winter pointed out is that if all of the churches around the world evangelized everybody and brought everybody to Christ who spoke their language and was part of their culture, there would still be 2.4 billion people outside of the church. Because these people groups were sealed off from Christian groups by barriers of language or culture or sociology. And they were not penetrated. So that evangelization does not take place like blue or black ink diffuses through water. Because nations are made up of a series of political nations, countries are made up of a series of little watertight compartments, each one a different culture, often with a different language, and the gospel must penetrate within that cultural framework in order to gain a hearing and in order to grow. And so Winter emphasized that the highest priority needed to be on cross-cultural evangelization. And originally the estimate was given that there were 17,000 or 16,750, sometimes the word is, the figure is used, of these people groups around the world in which there was no Christian church that was capable of evangelizing those people. And furthermore, 9 out of 10 of all missionaries were working among people groups which were already reached. Although the church movement there may be very small, yet missionaries were involved aiding those people groups. And so the emphasis began to shift in missions, this great issue of the unreached peoples, these 16,750 or these 17,000 people groups in which there was no witness. Well, where are these unreached peoples? Where are they located? Dr. Winter referred to the massive omission. And by that, he meant Hindus, Chinese, and Muslims. Later, this has been refined. For instance, today, because of the progress that has been made, both in defining with more precision what constitutes a people group, and because many people groups, which a few years ago were not reached, either are in the process of being reached or are reached, or we can lower that number to about 12,000 people groups. Of those 12,000 people groups, 4,000 are Muslim. 3,000 are tribal. 2,000 are Hindu. 1,000 are Chinese. 1,000 are Buddhist. And 1,000 make up all the others. The difficulty of the task can be illustrated by the fact that within those 4,000 Muslim people, we think all Muslims speak Arabic. That's not true. Among those 4,000 Muslim groups, there are 580 different languages which are used. And among the 1,000 Chinese, there's 200 mutually unintelligible dialects that hinder communication of the gospel. That's why it's important to think in terms of people groups. Now, a lot of times, terminology has been somewhat confused. For instance, you hear the term frontier people, unreached people, hidden people. What do they mean? Sometimes the same word is used to refer to different things. Sometimes these words are used to refer to the same thing, and so there has been the need to clarify terminology. And the term hidden people is now passing out of usage. It's passing out of favor. So don't use it anymore. Now the terminology to use is simply unreached peoples and missions which are committed to reaching unreached peoples are called frontier missions. So frontier missions seek to reach unreached peoples. That's the terminology that's being used today. The very word hidden was really redundant because to say, well, this is a hidden people. Well, if you can name the people, obviously they're not hidden anymore. The term had value to point out that people groups in our midst were often overlooked. Sometimes these people groups were cultural linguistic groups. Sometimes they were sociological groupings set off because of their sociology rather than their culture or their language. For example, let's take the Kurds. When I use an overhead projector, I have a map of the Middle East. Now, since the Gulf War, everybody's heard about the Kurds. But just a few years ago, if you talked about the Kurds, you'd get a blank stare. And so what I used to do was show a map of the Middle East. There's Iran and Iraq and Turkey and Syria and Lebanon and Jordan and Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states. I'd show that map. And I'd say, where's Kurdistan? Kurdistan. People would look at the map and they didn't see Kurdistan anywhere. I said, well, haven't you ever heard of the nation of Kurdistan? No, they hadn't. In fact, they had never even heard of the Kurds. I told them, well, the Kurds live in Kurdistan. Well, who are they? We don't see them. They don't occupy a seat in the United Nations. Who are they anyway? Well, now we know that here is the Kurdish people with their customs and their language, which are markedly distinct from Iraq or from the Turkish people or from the people in Lebanon, and yet they constitute a significant minority which is spread across the Middle East, and in some of the countries of the Middle East, they even form a majority. In fact, a part of the struggle in the Middle East is that there's so many of them and they're so distinct that they want to have their own nation. And this has caused great conflict in the Middle East. Well, the Kurds are an unreached people group. The Kurds are an unreached people group. I was involved as a missionary, on the sidelines, in a sense, in the discovery of a hidden people group or an unreached people group in the country of Costa Rica. Well, Costa Rica, those people are Hispanic. I mean, they speak Spanish. That's the national language. A few years ago, there was a student by the name of Stephen Shu, a Chinese, in a class I taught on church growth principles here at Columbia. And he came to Costa Rica, called me up. He said, remember at the close of the class, you said that if I ever got down to Costa Rica, I could come and visit you? He said, well, I'd like to do that. I said, oh, what are you coming for? He said, well, I'd like to start a church among the Chinese people. I said, the Chinese people? Well, I see Chinese people in some of the churches in which I minister here in Costa Rica. He said, yes, he said, but they all have to learn Spanish in order to participate in those churches. He said, there's all kinds of Chinese people in Costa Rica who don't speak Spanish. I said, oh, see, they were hidden people, the Chinese, in the country of Costa Rica, in Central America. And so he came and he lived with us. And he spent hours talking on the telephone in Chinese. We'd be in the other room and we'd hear this conversation in Chinese and didn't understand a word of it. And he started going around from Chinese restaurant to Chinese restaurant. I think in the city of San Jose, there are more Chinese restaurants per square block than in any other city in the world. And I'd go with him sometimes. I ate an awful lot of meals in Chinese restaurants. We went down to the port city of Limon. And here was a whole immigrant community of people who'd come from Hong Kong and Taiwan and were settled down, just kind of isolated the community off to itself of Chinese people. And he was committed through the Chinese Christian Mission, of which he was a part, of establishing Chinese churches for the Chinese people who simply were sealed off from the Spanish-speaking preaching of the gospel that was going on in Costa Rica. See, the Chinese in Costa Rica were a hidden people. And we don't use the term hidden anymore. We'd say they're an unreached people. We know who they are. And there's great progress being made toward reaching of the Chinese people in Costa Rica and in the other countries of Central America and South America. But it's not only the Chinese in Costa Rica and the Kurds in the Middle East who constitute unreached people, overlooked people, or as we used to say, hidden people, but there's another group of people. Although we usually think of hidden people in terms of cultural groups, Sue Thomas, the founder and president of Operation Sound, gives us another way to think of hidden people.
I've been a deaf all of my life, and people have always asked me, what's it like to be deaf? And I try so hard to really bring them into my silent world. Helen Keller once said that blindness separated a person from things and objects. Deafness separated a person from people. I myself use the description of taking a person into a shopping mall. You walk down the quarters, you look in store windows. You see people talking and laughing, but you don't understand what they're saying. Why? You have a window before you. You're on the outside looking in. But you, as a hearing person, has the doors that you can open up and walk through, and now with your ears hear that conversation. To the deaf, there are no doors. We are forever on the outside looking in. Now, if we're going to keep going with definitions, let's take the definition of the church. Basically, it's a group of people, a body, following the teachings of Jesus Christ. How does that definition conform with Helen Keller's? To be separated from people. It doesn't. Today we have over 250 million deaf worldwide that are out there without the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I believe with all my heart this represents the largest hidden lost people groups of the world today. And the church doesn't even realize it. Here in the United States we find a little bit 21 million. These people are on the outside looking in, waiting to come in. Thus far, they have not sat among the body of the church simply because there's three barriers that confront them. First, that sound barrier. Sound and the lack of it. You as a hearing person can have the gospel every second of your life today if you so choose. The tape recorder, the TV, those things called the Walkmans, and all the big hearing aids. You can run a marathon, you can shovel your snow, you can do whatever you want and still have that gospel. To the deaf, never once will they hear it, simply because they can't. The deaf. The second barrier is the word itself, the Bible. You know, a lot of pastors think, well, if they can't hear it, at least we can give them a track or the Bible, they can read it, they can understand. No, they can't. You see, the average reading level here in the United States is about the fourth grade level. Obviously, third world countries, there's no reading level. Why can't they read? How'd you learn to read? The ABCs, vowels and consonants. You sat there and you sounded out your words, and after 10 and 12 years, you came up with your vocabulary. To the deaf, those same 10 and 12 years trying to sound out their words, they master the first, second, third grade level. They'll never read the gospel. It's a barrier to them. It's not a book of hope. And that third barrier, I believe, is the church, the body of Christ that sits in her churchy Sunday. Why? Because they have yet to begin to pray, they have yet to begin to act, to break the sound barrier, to reach these 250 million deaf people. And why haven't they begun to act? Why? Because they didn't know. This is the first and foremost comment wherever I travel among pastors today. After I've spoken, people say, I just didn't know. I never knew. And because you didn't know, you weren't able to act, you weren't able to pray. The sound barrier is waiting to be broken. As Operation Sound, we're out to break that sound barrier. to be able to bring the awareness, the understanding, the knowledge to you hearing people exactly what it's like to be deaf, that we may be able to work together as a team to go forth to bring the gospel to all nations, especially the largest group of hidden, lost people of the world, 250 million deaf. Won't you join me in breaking that sound barrier?
How do you reach the unreached? One people at a time. What are the stages in reaching unreached peoples? Mission strategists have developed 6 steps to reach unreached people groups. These descriptive steps are as follows. First, reported. A group is reported to exist, and it's reported as possibly unreached. Then the second step is verified. The group is verified. It's verified that it is indeed a people group and that it is indeed unreached. The third is evaluated. The group is evaluated. Adequate research has been completed now to permit interested Christians outside this people group to make a decision to attempt to reach it. You want to know how large is the group? What's its language? What's its culture? What kind of previous attempts at evangelization have been made among this group? And so you've got reported, verified, evaluated, and then the fourth step is selected. That is, some agency or some church sufficient to the task has made a commitment to reach this people group. The group has been selected by a mission agency for later work, a mission agency that's sufficient to the task, that has the resources, that can do it. The fifth is supported. That's the fifth stage. In other words, it's been adopted. And it means that there are adequate resources for the agency to move ahead. Often there's a church mission partnership. And the necessary resources of prayer and manpower and money, they've all been pledged. And so there's support to go ahead. And then finally, the sixth stage is engaged. That engagement has taken place. Initial field work has begun with the intent of planting and evangelizing culturally indigenous church. These are the stages for reaching unreached peoples. What kind of resources are in place? We know that progress is being made. We're identifying with greater specificity more and more people groups, and the current figure is about 12,000. And about half of these are somewhere in this process of being reached. Dr. Ralph Winter, who has a graduate degree in mathematical statistics as part of his education, has shown us that we're talking about a closure strategy. In other words, when we talk about discipling the nations or discipling the people groups, that there are a defined, specific number of people groups. And as more and more are reached, there are less and less to reach. So it is not a possible impossible task to speak about reaching all the unreached peoples. We can identify them, and we can begin to strategize in the power of the Holy Spirit to minister to them and to establish the church there. Dr. Winter points out that there's great momentum in this direction. And he has identified the ratio of non-Christians per believer through the history of the church. For instance, at 100 AD, there were 360 non-believers for every believer. By 1000 AD, that number had been reduced so that there were 220 non-believers for every believer. By 1500, it had become 89 non-believers for every believer. By the year 1900, it was 27 non-believers for every believer. By 1950, it was 21 non-believers for every believer. By 1980, it's 11 to every believer. Today, it's 7 for every believer. What will it be by the year 2000? Or let's look at that. Let's look at this matter of closure, not just from the standpoint of the number of the non-Christians per believer. Let's look at it at in terms of the number of congregations per unreached people group. Back in the year 100 AD, about the time the Bible ceased to be written, for every Christian congregation, there were 12 unreached people groups. By 1,000, for every Christian congregation, there were 5 unreached people groups. By the year 1500, for every Christian congregation, there was 1 unreached people group in the world. But now by 1900, for every 10 Christian congregations, there's only 1 unreached people group. By 1950, for every 33 Christian congregation, there's just 1 unreached people group. By 1980, for every 162 Christian congregations, there's just 1 people group. And by 1990 or 1989, there were 416 Christian congregations for every unreached people group. So the momentum is there, and closure is possible, and the world can be reached, 1 people at a time.